hello and welcome everyone to this basically cursed episode of MTG Potpourri, because it has been basically about a week and a half in the birthing, and then it almost passed away within about the last 30 minutes. But joining me for a fantastic third episode of the Potpourri is I have Adam Staborski.
Hi, everybody. And I am not the Dr. Nick.
You have a much more natural picture, because we're recording on Skype today, and you seem more comfortable. I can talk to this Adam that's on this picture.
Well, it wasn't taken by Pro Tour photographer Craig Gibson, so it's strictly inferior to whatever you're looking at. And yeah, unlike Uber Conference, I can't actually see my own picture while we're talking, so I have no idea what I look like.
You're in a white room. You got a nice goatee going. You got a black t-shirt with like a red, almost like a maroon zip-up hoodie over it, and you look happy and relaxed. You look like a guy who's ready to podcast.
I am 100% sure that is not the black shirt or red hoodie that I am currently wearing, because I'm wearing the exact same type of outfit.
Boy, if we had more time, we'd switch this bad boy over to video, and then I would have them next to each other and be like, I think it's the same one. And the lovely voice you hear chuckling at Adam's expense is do you go by Mike or Michael?
Right. You know, either way, I think I go by Mike a lot of these days now.
Okay, well, we have Mr. Robles.
Oh, excellent. That's always the first test to see if you can actually pronounce my name correctly.
I don't know.
You did.
Oh, okay.
Robles like 99% of the time.
Robles. Okay, I guess I kind of just went 50-50 and picked one, and I won.
So Mike, what? Like what background is your last name from? Because I just assumed it was like one of those things where like your parents like came over on like a boat and naturalized, and the first thing they heard was the Hamburglar in a commercial, and so like we want that as last name. Robble.
Well, that's an even worse pronunciation. I get that very rarely. It's Spanish, actually. I think it was the it talked about oak trees. I remember looking at this not too long ago. My wife and I were on a just little getaway. We took ourselves a little getaway before the wedding and went to Leavenworth, which is a little Bavarian town not too far from Seattle.
Not the prison?
That's a lie, actually. No, not the prison. That's a lie. Okay. It's actually like 4 or 5 hours from Seattle. But we stayed a nice bed and breakfast, and there was this nice little sort of like learn your heritage. And so back in the day, names came from sort of like where you were, like the location. And Robles was a forest, usually I think oak trees was the big thing. And so that's where my name comes from, the Spanish oak tree forests of yesteryear, of yonder.
It's always kind of fun to learn what names mean, because those are like, whatever random name that is. If you guys want to, I can give you the quick. I don't know if you guys said the same thing. I think it was roughly about third or fourth grade. You had to do a family tree, for your main class. And I got in trouble because I was accused of making mine up because some of the names were so bizarre that the teacher thought I had just cheated and made them up, until my parents actually had to come to school and say, nope, those are the actual names of our relatives.
Wow.
Tom, you got in trouble because your tree was a wreath.
It's weird because obviously our family's been here now for multiple generations. When they came from whatever area of kind of Sweden they came from, it's the whole, Gustafson and John. We're here in Minnesota, Gustafson, Johnson. There's so many S-O-N names or S-E-N names, because you didn't have a last name. You were Gustafson or Gustafson. So when they came over, a lot of times they didn't have a last name. So my great-grandma, whose first name was Ingebug, they said, hey, we need a last name because that's what Americans do. So they picked the last name of somebody who died on the ship coming over, and that person's last name was Wang. So my great-grandmother was Ingebug Wang. So it was great-grandma Wang. And I also had, on the other side, obviously unrelated, I had great-grandma Ingebug Baseplug. And I got in trouble for that, but it was actually true. So, Mike, how about for you? Ed and I, obviously, we're familiar with you. This is the first time that we've actually spoken here in kind of the digital world. But why don't you share with, if somebody's maybe newer to the Magic game, kind of what your background is and even what you're doing today?
Sure thing. So I'll do the shortened story. I started playing Magic back in Alpha. I joke that I'm an old man, but it's true. I actually started playing in Alpha, sold all that stuff, got rid of all that stuff back in the day. Picked it back up, obviously, a few years ago, as you do. You take your breaks from Magic the Gathering. And was lucky enough to actually work at Wizards of the Coast as the community manager. I started out helping out D&D and the D&D digital stuff. And I eventually moved over to Magic Digital. And then I eventually took over for Magic just as a whole, and did that for almost 3 years before heading over to Microsoft, where I am now, where I am also still managing communities. I am working on a fantastic team with former Magic the Gathering brand manager Michael Gills, who really? I report to directly.
So yeah, that Microsoft too. That's kind of funny. Actually.
He is. He pulled me over, and he always got a lot of really cool ideas that they didn't allow, and I always had a lot of cool ideas that they didn't allow. So now we get to do a bunch of really cool ideas that they say you can do it if you can find the money to do so.
You're like Surface RT. They're like, great idea.
We need surfaces everywhere. Everyone needs a surface. So yeah, so I know the game Magic pretty well, actually. So I've been playing for a long time. My wife plays. She created the Lady Planeswalker Society, which is a safe and fun environment for women to learn and play Magic. And so I help her run those events. We do 6 events a month here in the Seattle area. So I'm playing an awful lot of Magic still, even though I'm no longer with Wizards of the Coast.
Now, for you, Mike, is there a certain format that you're the most into currently after coming back to the game?
Oh, man. You know, Yeah, I'd probably limited, and I know that's still even broad. I enjoy drafting a lot. I really didn't like drafting a ton at first, and I was like, oh, man, Constructed. But I realized that Constructed and Standard, kind of a pain in the butt, you know, to rotate every once in a while and figure out what the new metagame is, because I like brewing really strange, weird puzzle decks, which, you know, was EDH was right up there with me. So I really got into Commander. Okay. I still got into Commander. I had about 10 decks or so, and then was like, no, get rid of this. Got rid of all of them, and then kept like a specific 3. I was like, I will have no more than 3 Commander decks ever, because it was getting too crazy for me to try to figure out all the puzzles. So yeah, Commander and probably definitely drafting. I have a lot of fun drafting and have been feeling relatively good about my drafts the past few months. So
have you enjoyed the kind of the mix with Born of the Gods into it with Heroes?
Yeah. I've only done that once, and I've enjoyed it. And then actually, it's funny you mention that, because this will go up what Monday, on yep. This week on Tuesday and Thursday are 2 Born of the Gods Theros drafts for the Lady Planeswalker Society over in Seattle, and then the Eastside chapter has a draft that same week. So I'll be doing 2 Born of the Gods Theros drafts this week.
Yeah, I just heard I've only done just a little bit, and I've heard a lot of people feel it kind of ups the power level of decks, which can only – I don't know. Heroes was fun, but I think the Born of the Gods will add a lot to it. Even though
it won't surprise me. I've noticed with when playing that Born isn't as creature heavy, so you're essentially like getting your creature – you're getting your buffs and your combat tricks for the creatures you're going to pick from your Theros packs.
Let's see. So – and I guess, Mike, if we're going to really delve into your kind of your new passion here with Microsoft, what is your thoughts on – is he CEO? Is it the new CEO that they just recently announced?
They did just announce a CEO. You know, I don't know. I never met the guy. I hadn't really heard of the guy before. You know, I'm still new to Microsoft as a whole. The only real connection I have with Microsoft before is my Xbox 360. And my wife and I have an Xbox One that was given to us as a wedding gift, and we've been playing a lot of that.
Nice.
Yeah, that's a very funny long story. But I don't really know the guy. A good friend of mine, Cheryl Platts, who's a fellow improviser and also a Microsoft employee, she's actually worked with him and wrote a really, really nice Facebook post about what it was like when she had worked with him a couple years ago. And that made me feel much better.
Yeah, I mean, it seems from – I was a computer science guy before I did my career switch, and he comes kind of come more from the engineering tech side, which I think is actually a really positive thing. Like, he seems like he was a great choice.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially since, you know, we're moving so tech heavy so fast.
Let's see. And you guys, before we hop into our Magic discussion, you and Adam are going to give me some help. We were talking about cool tech items. Because what else do you talk about on a Magic podcast but cool tech items? So I was begging, pleading for a free Surface Pro 2. Probably not going to happen, but both you and Adam have spouses who have one. And you're going to share with me the pluses, the minuses, the joys, and the heartache of that piece of tech. Don't. It's okay, guys. I know you're excited.
I was going to let Adam go first.
Jump right in there.
Well, I actually tried to pre-order it as soon as I really liked the original Surface Pro, like when it was announced, and like any kind of first gen hardware, I kind of knew like you know, the new, you know, their new processors on the way, the, you know, Intel's Haswell line, whatever they want to call them. Not up into it as much as I used to be, but I knew that they were going to refresh it, refine, and fix some tweaks and quirks with the original. So when they announced the Surface Pro 2 and new processors, and tried to pre-order it, and my credit card was like, we're not going to let this order from across the country go through. And I'm like, okay. So basically I had to cancel my pre-order, and we went down to the actual Microsoft store on the day of release.
Wow.
Or I guess not the day of release. The Saturday after the release. This was released on like a Tuesday, and I was working a job at the time. I couldn't go down for that. So we go in, and it was a really great experience. They had all these like bundles, and they basically like gave us, like the manager threw in like a paint stylus for like the painting app, for my wife, 'cause she really liked that. I guess it's called Fresh Paint. I think.
Right. Oh yeah.
Yeah. And so she got a case and the whole works, and we ordered, I ordered a second, power supply or power charge stick, whatever it's called for. So we got one upstairs and downstairs, and she just loves it. Like you know, the fact that she can use it the way she uses her iPad, and she can throw on Netflix and cast it to our Chromecast, and, you know, help watch our daughter and stuff like that. But then she can like immediately switch and like update all of our Google Docs, which has all of like our bills and financial stuff in it. She can print. It does a lot of the things that she couldn't do on just like a different, you know, kind of like the dumber iDevice or whatever. But it's right. Exactly what she wants. You know, just touch interface. Windows 8 hasn't thrown her at all. You know, everybody complaining about it, and I'm like, it's actually really, really nicely done for somebody that doesn't want to bother with a keyboard hardly at all. Yeah. And that's my wife.
And the 8.1 update fixed a lot of things I think people, like the old hardcore desktop users, wanted. It did address quite a, because I have sort of a heavy duty desktop upstairs, and 8.1 got rid of a lot of things that I didn't like, so I was happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole nother rabbit hole to go down, but I mean, for a tablet device, it's worked great from day one. It was not a big deal.
What about for you, like, did your wife like have to hide her real feelings about it? She's like, oh, he works for Microsoft, I can't tell him what I actually think.
No, we actually got this before I started working at Microsoft. We had I was working for Microsoft, because it was I was given one to walk around with at PAX Prime. I'm thinking about PAX East because that's coming up. I was given one to walk around with at PAX Prime, and I, you know, got to show it to her. I showed her all the stuff she can do with it. She had seen my iPad and kind of messed around with it for a little bit. But the Facebook app, since it was essentially just a blown-up phone app, she wasn't really too loving on the iPad. I was like, you know, I would like this if I can mess with my docs, use Facebook the way I use Facebook on any sort of laptop without having to lug around a laptop. And then once I showed her the Surface 2 and she saw the Fresh Paint app, that she can use Facebook the way she wants to, and the fact that she was like, wow, this is a tiny, compact, amazing little laptop that isn't going to, you know, break my back when I walk around with it, she was sold. And she uses it to this day. She, you know, sit in bed and update her Facebook and all the events. Because, like I said, we run Lady Planeswalker 6 times a month. So she updates all of her events, creates the events, can update her stuff. And if she's feeling, you know, she gets burned out or doing all that stuff, she can switch over to Fresh Paint and just mess around and draw a little bit for a while. So she loves it. It's probably one of the better purchases I've made for her.
Now, do you guys have one of the, because they have a couple of different type covers, right? There's sort of more of a, like a really thin one, then a little bit of a thicker one that's has a little bit more, I guess, feel to the keys and whatnot.
Yeah, the touch cover is like the one that's really thin, doesn't really have any like clickiness like a keyboard. And then there's the type cover, which feels more like a traditional, like an ultrabook type keyboard. The ones that came out with the Surface 2, the Surface Pro 2. The touch cover was updated. I guess it's got a lot more sensors or whatever built into it. And when we did a quick check, because they were sold out of the type covers, because people don't like to change anything, so they wanted a cover that felt like they wanted their Surface to be a laptop. But so my wife tried out the touch cover, and the second edition, again, just like any hardware update, fixed a lot of the weird quirks and kind of the sensitivity of it, and she loves it. I mean, it's super thin. She can fold it, you know, folds right around behind it, so she can flip from using it at the kitchen table and literally just flip it behind, pick it up, and walk over and show something to Kate. I mean, it's like I watched the commercial happen. It's very weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it seems like kind of a nice fit of the kind of this, because we have a really old iPad and I like that form factor, but being able to actually do like our clinic notes and stuff would be really slick while you're out. And our kids are still super little, so we're not doing like going to games yet, but that's going to come up in not too long. And eventually when we start seeing through like 3-hour gymnastics practices, it'd be like, I will give anything to anybody to have something to do while I'm sitting here. Because I know what a pike is. I know what a straddle is. And I can't do these things. My male body will hurt and argue with me if I tried to do that. Did you, Adam, did you ever have to do like gymnastics with your daughter?
Not really. We're pretty careful and clear. She's actually really good. Like, my wife's a teacher, so we have like atypical habits. So it's like she will actually put one toy away before we'll let her get out the next one. And so she'll actually put a toy away and then get out the next one. It's very surreal because, like, that's not how I understand kids operate.
Well, you just got to get, yeah, because cleanup. Luckily for us, Barney has a really good cleanup song that you sing. And if you start singing that, boom, she turns into, like, the perfect maid. At, like, 2.5, she's like, okay, stuff goes in the box. All the stuff goes away. Yeah, it's amazing. I remember, I think, hating Barney when I was in high school, but now I'm actually really cool with Barney. Like, they're very wholesome shows. And
you guys are bros.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know if you guys watched Sesame Street lately. It's gotten really strange. We actually watched a recent episode of Sesame Street, and it was very different from what I remember. There was no Mia My Llama. They weren't going to the vet today. It just didn't even look familiar to me.
I feel like right there, we're all in the golf cart, and we literally just drove off the cliff. Like, this magic podcast is now officially jumping the shark.
Are you saying you want to talk about magic, Adam?
I would like to talk about magic.
Well, that sounds like some kind of conspiracy.
Yeah, so this is a conspiracy to get us back on task. Ding, ding. Mike gets a cookie for that.
I know podcast.
Fun point.
I can segue while on a segue. Bam. So this was one Mike and I were both really interested. I think Adam's kind of really curious about this too, is we have a new upcoming multiplayer themed, I guess, draft set. And this is interesting. It's called Magic the Gathering's Conspiracy. And they have a sort of a bizarre looking icon too. It's not very often they have a really asymmetrical bendy icon. I don't know if you guys have looked at the icon. It looks like those little the little hats you get when you graduate. That's what it reminds me of.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
So that is the symbol for this. And I think it was really interesting how this first came out, is even before kind of Wizards teased us with the, I guess when you say it was an encoded version of this page where you had to kind of crack the code. In some of the, was it Game Day? Where did people find kind of those crazy cards inserted in the packs?
At a Born of the Gods pre-release, I'm trying to remember the country. I'm pretty sure it was Latin America, South America. There was a phone number. It was in a pre-release pack, and so it like replaced like the premium foil in there, like the pre-release foil. And on the back there was a series of numbers stamped into it. Well, it was basically a Seattle number, and when you called it, it gave you a string of codes or characters, and those characters were under a Vanir cipher, and they figured out the cipher, and it gave you like basically the card text for
was the Magister
Cogwork Librarian.
Oh, it was okay. I couldn't remember if it was Cogwork Librarian or the Magister of Worth. That I can't remember which
the
one.
The Magister of Worth was the card, and it gave you the scramble that when you decoded it gave you Cogwork Librarian. And so that was like the preview, and then like the full announcement. You know, trick in full troll mode is just like, let's just code the entire announcement and let it sit for a day. And so through the beauty of Reddit, like somebody figured out the Vanir cipher in like 30 minutes. So we all had it anyway.
It didn't take long for that whole page to be decoded, but yeah, it's the internet. So it's going to happen.
Yeah. So it just seemed like it was kind of a cool way. And then eventually they made it actually much bigger when they actually had the full page, that it was a pretty easy substitution cipher that they used for that page. But it is, in some ways, it's a really unusual set. It's something they haven't done before. So I will just give a couple of little tidbits about that. I'll let Adam and Mike talk about it as well. So they say experience a magic forest. So guys, travel. You're having a conspiracy. You're in a bizarre multiplayer. So this is when you're drafting a deck. You're not doing, you know, P versus P, one versus one. You are doing big free-for-all games. So that's really strange. It says, the intrigue begins long before the spells are first cast. This is the first ever multiplayer-focused booster set. New mechanics enhance multiplayer play. Has returning favorites throughout Magic's history, which a lot of people are kind of questioning what things might get potentially reprinted. Nothing from the restricted list. Just don't even think of it. It's not going to happen. Deception and Treachery is designed to be drafted with 6 to 8 players who then split into groups of 3 or 4 players for big free-for-all multiplayer games. Has a number of cards as 210 is what they list on the page here. And coming out June 6th. And I kind of, it's 3-letter abbreviation of CNS, which to me means central nervous system, but
that's what it's attacking. It'll attack, the cards will mess you up so bad, it'll attack your central nervous system.
Yeah. So, Mike, you said you were you're pretty interested in this, because obviously you're a big limited player. It sounds like you're coming more a little bit from the casual side. So is this kind of right up your alley?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've always been a kitchen table player until I started working at Wizards. You know, when you start working at Wizards, you have to get good. You have to get really good really fast. I still try to maintain sort of that casual spirit. Like I said, my EDH decks, I think I have one actual like just big stompy. The rest are just really strange ideas I had. But when I draft, you know, I'll try to draft a weird combo if I find one, but I'll also try to draft something that might get me a couple of packs when I win. I love drafting with friends. We have a Modern Masters cube that we built, which is a ton of fun. So the fact that there's a draftable set coming out that will have cards that affect the way others draft and you can mess with the other players is exactly, it's right up my alley. It sounds like it's just going to be a ton of fun. I've already been talking with Tifa, but like, let's get some boxes, let's build a cube after we've opened up our packs. Like, this will be so much fun.
Yeah, so Mike, why don't you give us read through what Cogwork Librarian does? This really seems to feature what is going to be different about these drafts, and I was going to have Adam go over the Magister of Worth, which has a lot more text on it.
I gotta find it. There it is. Hang on. I was not prepared for that.
It's the one that looks like a cow. It has 6 nipples sticking out of it.
There we go. Clockwork Librarian. Oh, what? It's not what
I guess those are scrolls. Never mind.
Oh, I can't even find it. What is this at here?
I'll put a link in the spoiler. I put a spoiler link in the show notes. Grab it.
There we go. That's me being completely unprepared and unprofessional.
Yeah, are you getting bonus points for this, Mike, using Skype, being a Microsoft employee?
No. All right, so Clockwork Librarian is a 4-mana cost artifact. It's a 3/3, and you draft Cogwork, that's why. Cogwork Librarian face up. As you draft a card, you can draft an additional card from that booster pack. If you do, you put the Librarian back into that booster pack. This sounds awesome. You're essentially being like, I'm going to hang on to this so that when I see a good pack, because you always have those packs where you're like, oh, man, I want this card. And I want this card. Well, if you've got the Cogwork Librarian face up, you can take both those cards, put the Librarian back into the deck, and then pass it on, which just sounds awesome. I cannot wait.
Yeah, and kind of going with this, they say out of the 210 cards, 65 of these new cards are going to be brand new, so the other ones are going to be reprints. And of these 65 new cards, only 52 are going to be legal in things like Legacy and Vintage. So obviously 13 cards are going to be like Cogwork Librarian, where they're going to be doing crazy things that are just not going to fly in any other sort of game.
Which sounds awesome, to be honest.
Do you guys feel like this is sort of a halfway point of the kind of really crazy casual players that wanted a third, you know, unset, like Unhinged, Unglued, while the rest of the people that maybe weren't quite as into that, this is sort of meeting us halfway?
I would say yeah, actually.
I'm not looking at like people's pants and making balance cards in their head and wearing denim, but we're still...
As somebody who proudly almost just bought a box of Unhinged because maniac and I love that set, like, I'm not digging for lands. I'm digging because it's a fun environment for me. I totally get why cards that you really can't play in any format are unappealing for most Magic players, especially like, you know, kind of like the, like, because Un was so far off the block, like, the rules can't handle the cards at all. many of them, I think that just kind of turns a lot of players off because, like, it breaks the game in a fundamental way. Like, this rules system, which is really complex, growing every set, really, really hard to master. And then it just throws that aside and be like, I don't even know how these cards work. They just do stuff. I think that's kind of like the ultimate downfall of an unset. I feel like this is as close as we're going to get. Plus, it's a very clever way of reprinting cards. again, it's another way of getting, you know, reprints out there that aren't in a pre-constructed deck, that aren't, specifically targeted to any format. So they could reprint, you know, like High Tide for some reason. You know, it's a common from Fallen Empires that they really right. can't stick anywhere. But they could do some sort of cool big mana blue thing in this draft environment, and it makes total sense to slip it in there. You know, I don't know. Like, it just seems smart.
Let's see. Adam, do you want to give us the other card that we have so far from the set? Just because it gives probably one of these other big multiplayer keys of this.
Yeah, this is totally actually a really, really clever card. I'll get into it. Magister Worth, it's four colorless, white-black. So it's a badass 4/4 angel with flying. And has this keyword ability. They call it Will of the Council. You know, when it enters the battlefield, starting with you, each player votes for Grace or Condemnation. If Grace gets more votes, each player returns each creature card from his or her graveyard to the battlefield. So everything comes back. If Condemnation gets more votes or the vote is tied, destroy all creatures other than Magister of Worth. And so it's kind of like so in multiplayer, obviously it turns into like everything's empty on the battlefield, like Grace, like we can all get our creatures back, or everybody else's except for this one angel blows up. It's kind of it kind of feels like a natural evolution of the commander mechanic that they had the first time around, where you can pitch in, anybody can pitch in mana to beef up the effect, and everybody that pitched in any mana gets the bonus.
Yeah, the join forces.
And so the problem with that is, like, you know, if the three players in front of you each throw in five mana because they're desperate to draw cards, you can throw in one and you get the full benefit. So the whole diminishing returns, like, politicalness of it was really awkward. But this is, like, totally, like, I mean, it's totally a vote, you know, and like the, you know, when the vote's like coming up and like the last player can like tie it or tip it towards Grace, like that's going to lead to some kind of cool moments where, like, you know, the whole table talk will take over. Like, come on, like, let's all get our creatures back. Let's all have a lot of fun. And like that player's always gonna be like, let me see your graveyard.
Yeah. it does great for politicking and just arguing and yelling at each other and, you know, physical threats and other stuff that usually go in multiplayer games.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things about the set, though, is several of the cards, I think like 13, aren't going to be legal for play in Legacy. So I don't know exactly which cards are, if there are these cards or what that means. But just one thing that I wanted to point out was really interesting is Magister of Worth in a duel. Basically, it turns into a Wrath of God that leaves you with a 4/4 flying angel because you just choose Condemnation every time. Because the wording is the vote's tied. It doesn't matter what your opponent chooses. You just end up with a 4/4 whatever. And so it almost makes me think, like, a lot of people play Desolation Angel in like show and tell, or like they'll side it in. And this feels like a very similar type of choice for that. Obviously it's not wouldn't replace that, but it just seemed like really cool. Like they, in a duel, it turns into this like super overpowered Wrath of God.
Yeah, so I agree with you, Adam. I think that these are ones that will actually be legal. I think the 13 ones that will not be used are going to be all ones like Cogwork Librarian, where it's going to be doing something weird with the drafting process, which just is not going to be allowed anywhere else.
And it looks like Cogwork Librarian is a common, which is like phenomenal for me because I'm super excited with my Pauper Cube. Like, I can jam him in there, and now I've got like a wacky drafting card to go alongside, you know, my Carnivorous Parrot from Unhinged.
And at the very worst, you have what amounts to, I guess, a Hill Giant. At this point, it's a 4-mana 3/3, which is not, also does not terrible. I was trying to look.
I mean, it's totally fine. Common.
And it was just, and I'm looking at the actual image of the Cogwork Librarian card, and I'm comparing this to the Magister of Worth, where the Cogwork Librarian has a different, like, watermark behind the text. I didn't know if that has something to do with it being something that affects draft. You guys see what I'm saying? I can't quite. It almost looks like a signet.
Well,
like,
the image of the Magister of Worth is the release promo. So it's watermarked with the sets. So.
Yeah, but on the card, this one looks like it's, you know, on a non-special version where there's an actual watermark behind the text. It almost looks like when you do like the wax seal on the letter and you would push it in with your signet ring. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, I mean, maybe all the cards that affect drafting, have like that watermark on them to help them stand out. I don't know. Like we gotta wait to find out.
I like interesting I like interesting watermarks. I thought that was kind of fun. So it seems like in general we're all excited for the set. It's going to be a lot of fun to draft. What do you think, you guys? You know, we have 65 new cards. Obviously, 13 you can't use in, we'll say, any sort of constructed tournament play. What do you feel the kind of shelf life is of these? Is this, are we people going to burn through really fast? We're never going to hear about it again? Do you think this is something that they would actually try to continue in further sets? Or they just, is this where your Wizards is throwing stuff against the wall and see what sticks?
Yeah, I don't even pretend to, like, I know what's going on anymore when it comes to Wizards of the Coast. This might be one of those things where it surprises them, right? Like Modern Masters did. They're like, well, you know, we knew Modern Masters was going to be good. They didn't realize how good it was going to be. I think this is something that a lot of the draft heads are going to love. Whether or not that ends up becoming whether it blows up and everyone's like, we need more, we want more, or it's just sort of, yeah, this was fun. What you got next? You know, everyone's going to wait for whatever else comes up. Everybody's already asking for Modern Masters 2. Everyone's asking for, you know, a sort of cube product. You know, this may be the closest thing we get for a while. And that's, for that reason alone, people may love it because of that.
Yeah.
So the important thing, though, is just like Modern Masters, this comes out like about a month before Magic 2015. So that's kind of putting a shelf life on this. It's saying, look, you know, this is going to be the cool thing everybody talks about, and it's going to be a fun, wacky thing, and it might even be sanctionable for F&M. Like, you know, we don't know what kind of support is going to happen for it, but it's definitely, like, set up as this is a limited-time experience. We're going to bring you right back to something that's very comfortable, that everybody knows how it works, and you know, it's going to be over with. So I would not be surprised that this turns into a Modern Masters type where people want to hold on and hoard boxes and things like that. Although on the flip side, it is only a 210 card set, and depending upon the amount of reprints in it and the value of those reprints, it could be significantly less desirable than like Modern Masters, because it's not full of Dark Confidants.
Right.
Let's see. So, I mean, obviously, we're really into this. We just have very basic information. We only have two cards that are going to be new in the set, but most people seem excited, and hopefully they will start dribbling this out to us on a semi-regular basis. And, guys, I wanted to just talk over one other product that was announced that normally I'm not excited about these, but I wanted to mention it because Gavin was one of the two people listed as coming up with this and actually developing the product. And this is the Next from the Vault set, From the Vault Annihilation.
Oh, yeah. That thing sounds awesome.
Yeah, so it just I'll kind of read their little press release. It just says, Beyond Destruction.
Tom, why are you kind of going with this with such a whimper? I mean, this should be like coming in with a bang, right? Well,
to me, on a fundamental, I mean, I love Gavin. On like a base, I guess, moral level, I hate From the Vault sets. With a burning passion, I hate these things. Just because unless you are either have time during the day, I will never be able to get one of these at MSRP. And that really annoys me, I'll be honest with you. Just part of me is just not willing to pay, you know, some of these old ones have gone for like $50, $100+, depending on what was in the sets. Sometimes I feel like I'm being penalized for being at work during the day, so I can't line up at the card store to get one of these. And they're really cool. I would love to have them, but I never will.
See, I'm kind of like on the opposite side of that, Tom. I also don't have time to line up at the card. Well, I do now, but I typically didn't have time to line up at the card store. So for me, like, From the Vault was, you know, like playing Commander, playing my cube, like I tried to find like the coolest version of a card possible. So for me, like I'm totally willing to bite the bullet and pay, you know, well above MSRP. Like I totally appreciate like what the value of the box is. It's not just, you know, they say it should be priced at, you know, $40 or whatever like that. And that's probably like what it costs with respect to, you know, the typical inflation on the wholesale rate. But, you know, I know that it's a way of supporting the local stores. So like, I'll go ahead and overpay, and I put that in quotation marks, from a local store, because I'm willing to support that local store and say, hey, look, you know, I'm putting money in your pocket because you're here every other week when I'm playing for free, or I brought my cube, or I'm just hanging out, or I just swing by and say hi, and I'm not making any of those other purchases other times in the year. And I think people forget that it, you know, that not every product is meant for every player. And I'm okay with that. Probably because I always have the money for it.
Yeah, well, like you said, I mean, this wasn't made for me. So that's, even though I don't like it, doesn't mean that they're not. Obviously, they do well. They've made a number of these at this point. And this one just seems exceptionally fun, where it's apparently, as far as we can tell, it's going to be a lot of really awesome removal. It just says, harness the savage power of 15 of the most brutal magic cards ever unleashed. How do you not want the 15 most brutal magic cards ever printed? These limited edition black bordered super weapons, God, this is a great press release, are legal in many tournament formats. Sweep the battlefield clean with this powerful arsenal and blast the opposition into oblivion. This is going to come out August 22nd, and I just thought it was, well, that's interesting. Magic Online release date's the same, August 22nd. That's kind of cool. And it says product concept and development credited to Gavin Verhey and Jeremy Jarvis. So I thought kudos to Gavin. So hopefully it's really, really awesome.
But one of the questions I have around it is, one of the things they used to do with From the Vaults was include a preview card from an upcoming set. You know, whatever the big fall release was, they, you know, like with From the Vault artifacts or relics that had sort of body and mind in it. And it was kind of like your first chance to play with a card from the future, so to say. So I'd be really curious to see if this is just like From the Vault 20 was, where it's just strictly a reprint set, or if they include something, you know, some brutal spell from the future.
I think at some point I'm excited when we have enough of these, so there can be some crazy expensive draft of From the Vault sets.
From the Vault.
I've got my boxes ready to go.
That would be interesting to watch and see. That'd be cool. And just see people open them and then just run away stealing the cards. So yeah, Gavin. So I mean, pretty excited. They give one picture on the, I guess we have one picture of one of the cards, and I was trying to figure out what they might be trying to suggest with this, because obviously it's going to be large. Getting this, I'm trying to tell if it's going to be a mix of kind of direct removal and sweepers, or is this literally going to be all sweepers, since they mentioned sweep the battlefield clean. Or, I mean, this could be, you know, ones that just remove creatures from the battlefield, return them to people's hands. I mean, there's so many ways they could go with this.
I swear to God, if like Doomblade is in this box, the belly aching will be infinite.
How about Terror? How about we just go old school and go for Terror in that thing? Just a bad card.
I can go for a foil Terror.
It would look kind of cool. I'm not sure what kind of art they'd have on it, but I'd be behind that. So if you are really interested, that says you can use the hashtag MTGANH for discussing this product on Twitter. So we know we all love Twitter.
That is true.
So Adam and Mike, do you guys have any other topics you wanted to bring up? Or Adam, I know you had one for sure.
Pro Tour, baby.
Yeah, we're talking about teams. There's a buttload of them.
There are. It's kind of awesome, actually.
And I do want to pimp slap the team that named themselves Dogue. That just seems dumb. I'm going to be honest, that's just dumb.
These are Magic players. Come on.
Yeah, where's the Goatsy?
I'm surprised
where's
there aren't any team two different Doe teams.
I'm Goatsy 1, and we're Goatsy 62.
Obviously this has come out after the Pro Tour, so congratulations to Blankety Blank representing Blankety Blank Country for winning Pro Tour Born to the Gods. Yay, clap, clap, clap. What really stood out to me was just the volume of players that aren't just working on a team, because I think a lot of players have worked on teams, but have taken the effort to kind of like flag themselves and raise their hand. And Lauren Lee did an awesome job collecting a lot of information, providing a lot of corrections, just pulling all of this together. And so we worked together to put it on Gathering Magic and share it as far as possible. And, just like it seems like at least 30% of the field is on this team page. And I'm sure there are more teams that, you know, certainly from other countries that are familiar with Lauren Lee didn't get the English call outs on Twitter and Facebook to team up. And I think that one of the major things that's really kind of I think come out of the Pro Tour in recent years is just that being on a team is now so important that everybody is finding some team to be on, because that seems to be, a significant factor in success.
So, and this is, I mean, there obviously a few months ago we had a lot of, I don't know if you want to call it controversy, where there's maybe changing of names for some pretty well-known players between Star City Games and Channel Fireball. And it is
just a sponsorship change. Yeah. Conley totally covered that.
Yeah.
I think in the first episode, it's just sponsorship money was better with one name than the other.
So here you can go look at the you know, going through this, you know, there's a lot of teams on here. The first one I'm going to call out is the first team on this list is called 13 Angry Men. I have counted this three times. There's only 12 names on this list for this team.
That's the joke.
That's so dumb. Call it Eight Men Out or something like that. Well, at least name it after a good baseball movie.
Seven Samurai.
Yeah. We talked about this a little bit when Colin was talking about the teams. I'm still not sure kind of who this is for. I understand from the pro player standpoint, where obviously they can share ideas, you know, play test against people with a similar caliber. But I'm still not sure how this translates to maybe fans of the game or fans of the pro tour to help them care. It almost feels like now that teams are kind of being forced down my throat a little bit, and I'm not sure. And right now, when you have one team named, you know, Channel Fireball, and then we have one that's named Dogue and 13 Angry Men, it almost seems like there should be some sort of like a standard way of naming or level to be taken seriously.
Oh man, I hope not. GP, is it GP? No, it's not GP. It's GP Portland. We're the first one that my wife and I can actually play in since departing from Wizards. And it's the team sealed. And so we're hoping to have our team name be Team Third Wheel, because it's my wife and I and a friend of ours.
So that's, but I guess you're also not touting. Are you not going to make like t-shirts and weird stuff like that? Are you in every picture you have to be wearing a hat? And
We are. Why would you not make a t-shirt?
Like Garth in Wayne's World, where he's got, you know, the all Reebok gear on.
No, we're totally making t-shirts. We're going to have t-shirts, the Lady Planeswalker Society, in the colors that we may or may not be playing. And if we don't, then it'll just throw everybody off because they'll think we're playing a color, but we're actually playing a different color, which will be also fun.
Yeah, so you're making up a team for – you're creating a team for fun.
For fun and profit. mostly fun.
Or hopefully mostly profit, I would think would be the best.
Yeah, hopefully mostly
profit. Doesn't it? Why name your team Team Flappy Bird? And the money will just pour in.
But then we have to bow out after the first day.
Yeah, well, you make your like $300 million and then you'd be like, you know, guys, too much attention.
It's too much, guys. I don't like all this attention. Have you met me and my wife? We love attention. I don't think you realize that.
Okay, well then Team Flappy Bird. Well, you could be Team Flappy Bird Third Wheel. You could just put it all together.
There you go.
So, I am not the people that they are trying to communicate with. Do you feel that this kind of new proliferation of teams is a, you know, a big positive? Do you think this would be something that is going to become interesting? I mean, is it going to be like the Olympics where, you know, countries will have their own teams? Where do you see this going?
I think this is going to be a good thing. Like, definitely, people can root behind a team, right? And if their favorite player gets knocked out, they can at least vote for that favorite player's team. And I think it's something that's really, really neat. I mean, some of the teams are extremely impressive. This is the one I was looking at. The CFB Pantheon. Like, that's an impressive team. There's so many ridiculous names on that team that it's one of those things where, like, regardless of who wins, you know that everyone on that team is going to help. So, if anyone on that team does well, you know that it was a team effort. And that's really what I think this boils down to.
Yeah, and there's a team just called Japan, and it's all very well-known Japanese players. That, yeah. To me, that seems really cool. Like, hey, that's kind of neat. They're kind of coming as a, you know, a country, a team. That seems like something I could get behind to vote for. You're like, hey, that's awesome. These are all people, probably not from the same area, but hey, they're all there. I could almost see that there'd be sort of world regional differences in play style. I think that would be interesting to see. While some of these teams are obviously more online based with players from all over the world, which,
yeah,
neat for mixing, but it seems like it might kind of lose almost like a unique characteristic that might come from more, I don't say homogenous teams, but something where they have a little bit more in common, be it culture or geography, something.
Right.
I don't know. I find those like disparate teams like the best example of what Magic can do. I mean, because think about what it says. It says all these people from all over the world with all these different, you know, all the differences between them love this game so much that they're going to work together to be the absolute best they can be at the absolute best tournament to do it at. Like that. That's just awesome. I mean, that's like the cool story for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think for me is I'm almost feeling this is the, you know, Olympics are going on right now, Winter Olympics. People love it because you can get behind your country. It doesn't have to be your own country, but you can kind of say, hey, I'm going to vote for this country that sent one person to the to the Winter Olympics for some bizarre reason. That's awesome. I'm voting for the Jamaican bobsled team or whoever it is that year. So it seems like I would like to know who the power teams are. I would like to know who the underdogs are. So a lot of people like to vote for the underdogs.
Well, both of the Channel Ball Fireball teams are probably the highlight teams because both of them have Hall of Famers and presumed soon to be Hall of Famers. You know, they have some of the biggest names in Magic history in them. I mean, John Finkel, Frank Karsten, LSV, Brian Kibler, you know, Huey Jensen, Paul Reitzel, Gabriel Nassif. I mean, you can just go on and on and on. Rich Hoehn, yeah. Like one of my old school, like, you know, Frank Karsten and Rich Hoehn, I wish they were just on a team together because that would just be my team. Like, I didn't, you know, when I learned about Magic and I first learned about the Pro Tour, like, I thought Limited was just all luck. Like, it's just, you know, it is what it is. And, like, you know, picking didn't really matter. You just pick good cards and you're supposed to magically get a good deck out of it. And, like, the fact that Rich could consistently do so well at Limited, just, like, you know, like there had to be more to it that convinced me to do it. And, of course, Frank Karsten, if you read his stuff, he's insane. He's just really, really good at everything, I think. I'm kind of a fanboy, so take that for what you will. You know, and then there's, you know, there's other teams that have a lot of strong players, like Elaborate Ruse, which has, you know, Stanislav Sifka, Willy Adel, Leven Flock, you know, Simon Gortzen and Matej Zadelkai, you know, two coverage guys. Matej is coming off of a, you know, top eight at a Pro Tour Dragons Maze. You know, Ollie Rad, another Hall of Famer. You know, you've got like Face to Face Games, which has, you know, basically a bunch of really good Canadian guys like John Stern, Alexander Hain, who's run a Pro Tour, famously defeating John Finkel with Miracles. You know, then you've got like of course, Team Japan, which just has, you know, Yuya, Saito for better or for worse, Mori, Mihara, you know, just a bunch of long, good Japanese players. And then there's like Team Revolution, which is really interesting because you got a bunch of like, you have like the Rob Castellian and a bunch of other like guys that you may not be as familiar with, but then there's, you know, like Melissa Datora, Samuel Estrada, Rafael Leve, you know, they've got another Hall of Famer in their mix. Just a bunch of really, you know, Guillaume Wafotapa, the Control Master. So those are like the kind of like the big teams. And then you have like a bunch of smaller, you know, basically everybody else at that point is almost a smaller team, you know, for better, for worse.
So is this something like during the actual Pro Tour, is this going to be something that's going to be like shown or almost like advertised during matches, like which team they're from? Or is this something I would only know if I had, say, come to this page on Gathering Magic and seen the players there?
I think it's something that'll come up. I mean, typically teams will find a really good deck, and if they think it's the deck, they'll typically all play it. You know, with some variations. You know, some people just play whatever deck they still want. Like if Guillaume Wafotapa is not playing a control deck, like something is very, very wrong with the fabric of the universe. But, you know, it's one of the things where, like, you know, for example, you know, the two channel fireball teams, you know, it's a really easy story to go there that there's, you know, maybe some competitiveness between them. Like, you know, which team is performing the best is always kind of an interesting factoid. And how you quantify that, there are a couple different ways you can look at it. Like, which team seem to have found the best constructed deck versus which team seems to be the best at Limited. You know, so there are things like that where the quality of the information the teams bring to the Pro Tour can make a huge difference. And seeing that effect in the standings and results of the teams themselves is kind of like the most interesting thing that can happen. You know, like at Pro Tour Theros, you know, the fact that the team that the French had, you know, Jeremy Dezani and his teammates had a really good version of the mono blue deck, you know, and it paid off where they, you know, basically teammates ended up in the finals. That's, you know, that's kind of like the ultimate team goal, is just to be like the final people standing, where it doesn't matter. I mean, it does matter for them individually who wins, but like the fact that they found the best deck and brought it is a really cool claim to fame, I think.
Well, I guess I'm kind of excited if they, you know, somehow are able to show this so I could follow a team or kind of know the team of two people are playing in a match. That's cool. It adds one other layer to kind of get into those matches.
And I missed one other big team. And just to cover myself here, team TCGplayer.com. Conley is a featured member there, but there's also Craig Wesco, Andrew Shroud, who had a top eight at Pro Tour Dragon's Maze, Steven Mann, Pro Tour top eight at Gatecrash. Ari Lax, another one of the players that I personally really enjoy. He's been doing very well over the past couple of years. A lot of Grand Prix, top eights and wins. Really, really good. Really, really good team. Mark Lalonde, he just won a Grand Prix, limited Grand Prix last weekend in Mexico City, which is kind of very relevant coming into a format where, you know, you're going to play six rounds of limited, ideally.
Okay, cool. Anything for you about this, Mike, before we kind of, we'll say, wrap it up?
No, I was just listening to Adam. Man, I can listen to Adam go on about this for hours.
I was kind of saying here, too, just kind of like, that's cool. I should be taking notes at this point.
Right?
A lot of credit goes to Lauren Lee, because, like, I, you know, from doing some coverage, especially throughout last year, and you know, I'm just much more cognizant and aware of a lot of these players now. And, like, I remember seeing a lot of the names and having a lot of conversations, but seeing how they've grouped together has just been really fascinating for me. You know, there's the very business-like, you know, Channel Fireball pantheon where it's, we're a block and we're a superpower and we're looking for the highest bidder to sponsor us. And that's awesome. But then it's like, you know, team TCG player where Conley hopped over and they've got a Pro Tour champion and a bunch of moto grinders. And then, like, Ari Lax is just super consistent, you know, and they're spread out from all over the country, in the US, you know, it's just kind of feels like team USA, like, you know, like the guys next door kind of feel. So it's just every team kind of has like its own like fabric going to it. So I think that's why it kind of excites me so much. It's just, I know a lot of these players and I've watched them play and most, you know, I would consider most of them, you know, fabulously great compared to me. And seeing them work together, you know, kind of, you know, I want to see what they can do.
Okay, I am writing that down. So I do need to keep a list of what truly excites Adam, you know, just for a few. Just Miss Valentine's Day.
My wife
year.
Sometimes prints out like faces of Magic players and just wears those to bed.
Okay, do you want me to go further with that one? I mean, that was the most amazing lob I've ever been given on a podcast for quite a while. But the eyes are burnt out with cigarettes. Oh, that makes it better. Well, guys, to wrap this up is, Mike, you may not be aware, one of my other passions besides talking about Magic, I'm not very good at playing the game, but I love to talk about it, is B-movies.
Oh, nice.
And it's in the show notes, is they have one of the most amazing B-movies I've ever seen has been announced to be released in 2014. It's about zombie beavers.
Yeah, I saw that. I couldn't tell if that was a joke or not. I was like, no, is this an Onion article? Is that what's going on here?
It has, as far as we can tell, is, I mean, they have a trailer, which that doesn't necessarily mean it's a real movie, but it is listed on IMDb. And usually they're yet to have actual, you know, like production credits. Usually have to be legit to get it listed on IMDb. So I'm going to have a link to the show notes to the trailer for it, but I did want to give you guys the quick synopsis of this movie, because this sells it. So, the movie is called Zombievers, which is fantastic. So, Zombievers is an action-packed horror comedy in which a group of college kids staying at a riverside cabin are menaced by a swarm of deadly zombie beavers. So far, you're not too surprised, and nothing else I'm going to read, well, neither will that surprise you. A weekend of sex and debauchery, because this is a classic B-horror movie, soon turns gruesome as the beavers close in on the kids, and these are like adult kids, not like six-year-olds. Riding the line between scary, sexy, and funny, the kids are soon fighting for their lives in a desperate attempt to fend off the horde of zombie beavers that attack them in and around their cabin. And so it's worth watching. And also, if you are really a fan of B-movies, you're probably well aware of The Asylum. They are a production house that's been known. They make knockoffs. So say when a big blockbuster movie, say like RoboCop, comes out, they will then release a direct-to-video knockoff of that. So Android Cop just came out. And there's some classic ones, like when the Transformers movies were rebooted, they had Transmorphers.
Oh, I've actually heard about Transmorphers.
Yeah, and they have many, many of these. So if you're ever interested, obviously they're not good movies, but if you can enjoy campy, they will entertain you to no end, because they are... Were you guys exposed to Sharknado? That one actually kind of jumped into mainstream a little bit for how popular it was.
Yeah, no, it was there.
And Sharknado 2 is already being filmed right now. Yep. That's how popular it was.
I saw that.
And there's a boatload of people. Kelly Osbourne is now going to be in this. They have a whole bunch of, I would call them B to B plus level stars.
That's being extremely generous.
Yes. Yeah. I would consider Kelly Osbourne probably bigger of a star than Tara Reid. And most of the time, I'm pretty sure she has her name tattooed the inside of her wrist so she can remember what her name is. But that's about how good she is at acting. So, guys, that is the end of the show. Did you have any either topics or things that you wanted to shout out before we wrap up the week? Because we're supposed to be getting 10 inches of snow tonight, so I have to go snow blow one more time before to bed.
That doesn't sound fun at all.
I just have one shout out. I just want to thank Mike so much for filling in for Conley this week. Definitely
no problem,
appreciate
guys.
The flexibility. It was definitely cool to hang out, as it were.
Yeah, thanks, man. I had a lot of fun.
And you weren't drafting while we were talking, which is totally awesome.
No, I was not. We actually just finished filming. I have a YouTube channel with my wife called Video Time with Mike and Tifa. YouTube.com/MikeandTifa. And just before I jumped on, we had recording a video review for the board game Rampage that came out not too long ago.
Is this like Rampage, the old video game?
It is. It is loosely based on the old video game.
So do you guys dinosaurs. Have to fight whoever gets to be Lizzie? Because Lizzie was the best character always.
So they're all monsters. They're all dinosaurs.
Okay.
Yeah, they're all dinosaurs. But yeah, it's definitely a neat little game. You can look for the review coming out. It'll be out actually by the time this podcast goes live. It's coming out Friday, and it came out this past Friday, if we're talking in the future.
Yeah, so if you said it was YouTube Mike and Tifa, how do you spell Tifa?
T-I-F-A.
T-I-F-A, okay.
Yeah.
Somebody didn't play Final Fantasy VII.
I played that, no, yeah. JRPGs never sucked me in that much. Earthbound was probably the one SNES RPG that I got really into in those days.
That's like the JRPG-est of the JRPG RPGs.
I know.
Like, but it was so bizarre.
Also,
but
yeah, it's so amazing.
Yeah, maybe, I guess for me, the Final Fantasies have veered closer to anime. And that's just for me, that has just never, anime just has never resonated strongly with me. Well, Earthbound, I mean, the kid's name was Ash. It was just the craziest, weirdest game ever, but at least it seemed.
It was fantastic. I love that game.
It's a little more, I don't know, something I could kind of relate to. Especially at that age, I wasn't very old, so it was pretty straightforward. So, yeah, again, Mike, it was fantastic to have you, and I'd love to have you anytime, and I promise scheduling and technical difficulties would probably be less. Next time we try, I will not promise anything.
Yeah, sure thing, guys. I had a lot of fun. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, so I'm not sure because it's been years since I was on Monday Night Magic, but this was pretty similar to the style and flow of Monday Night Magic. Because Adam keeps me on track, which is usually something there to do that, saying, Tom, we're now talking about zombie beavers or revenge craft or whatever it is we've gone on to that episode.
Right.
Let's.
Revenge crab sounds awesome.
Did you not listen to that episode with Conley where we talked about there was a website where you could order pubic lice, so the organism, to infect yourself, so you could then infect another person out of spite?
Why do you keep going? Why are you continuing to talk about this?
Because this was a real thing, but it included treatment, so you could treat yourself.
Oh, it's horrible.
It was just truly fascinating. There, you're like, this is a real thing. Somebody
was like, oh man, you can like have a little army of crustaceans going to attack somebody. Like, that's where my mind was, like, 'cause that'd be awesome. You're like, go rise from the waters, my crustacean army, take out my foes. No, this is completely not that. It's horrible.
No, because I mean, if you've ever seen an actual like microscopic picture of a pubic lice, terrifying looking things. And just to know that they're sort of clambering like little, chitinous monkeys from my pubic hair to someone else's pubic hair is just blah. And that's where I'm going to end this podcast. That mental.
So,
image.
Mike, how can listeners get a hold of you?
I'm going to get a picture of a crab here for Mike.
Oh my God!
Keep talking.
No, yeah, you can find me. Easiest way to find me is on Twitter, just at Michael Robles, MichaelRobles. That's the most direct way to reach me, actually. I'm on Twitter a lot. Sweet. It's part of my job.
Fist bump.
Right.
If you want to get a hold of me, Adam Staborski, I'm at the_Stibs, STYBS, on Twitter. I wish I didn't have an underscore in there now, but it's fine.
So, Mike, in the chat window for...
I saw it. I'm not clicking.
Skype owned by Microsoft. We do have a fantastic picture of one of these little buddies.
Nope.
Interesting, you can also get these in your eyebrows. Like basically any of that type of hair, these can infest.
Oh, that's the worst.
Hey, I've treated multiple cases of pubic lice. It's worse when people bring them from home in like a little box. saying, is this Lys? And you're like, oh God, please, please let him be dead. That's all you could, because bed bugs obviously is also a big problem in a lot of states, and people would bring bed bugs. You're just terrified they'd be alive and like get into your clinic and infest like the carpet and everything else.
Yeah. That sounds like the worst.
Yeah. So yeah, if you're interested in a career in medicine, you can contact me. So you too can treat pubic lice.
Well, that's how do they do that?
Yes, but if you want to, I had a question for not only you guys but also for the listeners. If they want to send a message on Twitter, I am PSG Reader, so PSG READER, and I wanted to get an email address to use for the show. So I went looking for sort of third-party email services. I just wanted kind of a cool one, and I found you can actually get a Starfleet email address.
What?
I was really interested in this. It's $15 a year. And I'm willing to donate blood, whatever it takes to get that $15 to do this. But I need to pick the part before the @starfleet.com. So I just wanted, hopefully, people just to brainstorm ideas. I found Make It So is actually available. I thought that was a pretty good one.
That's a good one.
So just, you know, if you have any ideas, tweet them to me. And hopefully by next episode, I'll pick one out and we can use that then for the contact email for the show.
Sweet.
Because what is better, the email address for a potpourri show about MTG than one that's related to Star Trek? I think it fits.
You know, Tom, you can always get a free one from Gathering Magic. I can just give you one.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's free. Yeah, if you want MTG potpourri at Gathering Magic, you can have it.
Sweet.
Oh, just let me know.
Okay. If only you knew somebody that actually worked there, that'd be the best.
Yeah. Whose palms do you have to grease? Who would I have to learn what excites them to get this, possibly? I don't know. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for joining me. Please read. Consider this the end of the show as a public service announcement about the scourge of pubic lice. And join us. Well, I guess we record about every 2 weeks, so join us in a couple weeks. We usually come out on Mondays on GatheringMagic.com. I'll record an intro because obviously I say thank you very much for posting the show. It has been fantastic for me to be able to step back and not have to worry about that part of this. Be very honest with you. And join us then. So, guys, thanks for joining me.
No problem. Thanks again.
And I'm going to go snowblow because I'm excited.